This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm Capriotto, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast Guy. Welcome to the 623rd episode of Remarkable Results Radio. Hey, I caught up with Steve Mancinelli, AMAM, who proudly wears the scars of battle as a third-generation shop owner. Family business, networking, and learning how to run a great business are challenges that we all face. And Steve shares his many moves through the labyrinth of barriers that got him to where he is today. These are great stories from the School of Hard Knocks. Now, in his section of Denver, there have been 6 shops in 23 service bays closed since the pandemic hit. Now, either they liquidated, retired, or moved due to high rent in the downtown area during the pandemic, yet Steve survives. Hey, besides many wise thoughts, Steve talks about women at the front counter. Hey, we're honored to have Napa Trax sponsor this episode. You know, Napa Auto Care is so proud to partner with nearly 17,000 independent repair facilities. Now, the goal is to help members sell more needed repairs. Now, it's no wonder Napa Auto Care is the largest banner program. If you'd like to learn more, speak to your Napa representative today. Hey, never miss one virtual shop tour we present each week. Yes, a virtual shop tour. You can catch all the episodes on the aftermarketweekly.com website. And now, listen to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Yep, AW is now a podcast. Hey, the key talking points for this great episode with Steve Mancinelli reside at remarkableresults.biz/E623. Hey, the podcast is free, as you know, to all, and you can follow on your favorite listening app. And if you don't have one on your smartphone, go to remarkableresults.biz/app, APP. Hey, warm welcome to Steve Mancinelli from Mancinelli's Auto Repair Center, Denver, Colorado. Hi, Steve.
How you doing, Carm?
I'm great, man. You and I had a great talk the other day, and what really was a big, profound takeaway from me is when you said 6 shops closed their doors, 23 service bays since the pandemic in Denver.
Well, just before and since the pandemic, yes.
It's a big number, man.
It's typical of things to come. I mean, we're seeing a lot of change in the industry, and technology continues to grow at an exponential rate. The average age of a technician, and I think even for a shop owner for that matter, has continued to rise. And so it's no surprise that technicians are leaving and shop owners are retiring because they're getting older, and there's just not the backfill that there once was quite a few years ago.
So the story goes, you start a business and you're always waiting to either sell it or liquidate it, right?
That's what they say, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. That's what the pundits say. That's what all the wise men say. And here are people that are just shuddering. Were they liquidated? Do they still have their equipment in it? What do you see?
Half of them just liquidated, had auctions, sold their equipment off. One of the shops was part of a network, and they were really forced out of business by the city and county of Denver, kind of a eminent domain situation. Another gentleman retired, found a buyer for his business, and that buyer lasted about 2.5 years. And I think the equipment is probably still in that shop, although everything is boarded up. Another one completely moved out of the neighborhood, I believe, because the rents are just ridiculously high in our particular area, in the downtown Denver area.
I was shocked to hear that the real estate prices are off the charts. You were telling me that your business is worth more, as your land is worth more as condos.
It truly is. I mean, its best use is not for automotive repair. I mean, we're here because we love it. You know, and if it were all about trying to make the big score, I'd have sold it a long time ago.
Is it tempting?
Right now, no.
Okay.
It's not. It will become more tempting as time goes on. Certainly, I'm not getting any younger, but it's not an option right now.
That's my point. You're not getting any younger. You've been in the business 40 years? I don't know. What's your number?
This is my 49th year. I started down here when I was 11 years old. Cleaning the bathrooms, hand washing cars, pumping gas for my dad, and here we are.
That's the unbelievable, fabulous legacy of family businesses. You know, hell, I was one block away. The house was one block away from our business, right? And so here I'm getting off the bus. I'm 11 years old, and we're going to go across to the grammar school and do a little pickup game, right? The phone would ring and said, hey, what are you doing? I said, well, we're going to go play baseball. No, you're coming to work and sweep the floors.
Yeah. That's how it went. You know, my mother would pick me up at school. She says, I'm taking it down to the shop. I said, I've got homework. She says, you'll have to do it after you get home.
I know. Talk about never having any fun. So family business, we can learn an awful lot from you on this. I know you've got a really interesting story about, you know, some additional locations, dad having his brother, your uncle in the business. What can you teach us about the dynamics of family?
That it's really probably the worst when it comes to expectation, people leaning on each other. My father and uncle, they grew up together. The business relationship was never that great. And I witnessed on a couple of occasions where they almost came to blows. And it's two different personalities. And even though they were family, well, as the saying goes, there's no family in business, and there's not. And, you know, I learned that hard lesson when I opened up my shop at the second location and was leasing from the two of them. At that time, they owned both properties, this one that I'm currently at and the one that I opened my shop at. And I thought I had a nice thing going. Of course, I was a pretty young, naive 23-year-old kid, and I had been operating there for just about 3 years, was growing things nicely, and my father came in one day and told me I had 30 days to vacate. I said, what are you talking about? I still got 2 years left on my lease. He says, not anymore. He says, we're buying it out. Long story short, it was an orchestrated deal by my my uncle to get me to help him bail out his business because it was not doing well. Him operating on his own and quite frankly, didn't feel like working that hard anymore. So I didn't, you know, not knowing what to do and being stuck between a rock and a hard place with a 30-day vacate notice, I said, sure, I'll buy half of your business. So,
oh, I see. That was a half Nelson.
Yeah. So I bought half of his business. So I had half of the business I had before, and I was still leasing from the two of them together at this location. So he and I lasted 4 years, and I told him, I said, you know, Hunk, I said, I'm young enough, I can get another job. I said, you know, things just aren't working out well, and at the end of this year, and this was back in 1992, I said, at the end of this year, you and I are going to be done, and you need to decide if you're in a position where you can retire, or and I buy you out, or, you know, I'm still young enough, I can go out and get another job, and you can buy me out. As it were, I bought him out, and then I was back to having a, you know, a complete business, but I was still leasing from the two of them as far as the property goes. And, you know, learning the lesson I learned the first time, I negotiated an even longer term lease with, you know, the caveats of first right of refusal, first option to buy, et cetera, et cetera. And I exercised those options in 1999.
Wow. Important. Thank God the real estate values didn't go out through the roof before then. Is part of the problem with Dad, Unc, and you is just really not knowing each other's roles, what the areas of responsibility are?
It's a huge part. You know, one of the things that I take a lot of pride in, and of course, my staff as well, job descriptions, the processes, how we navigate the day-to-day, everybody knows their role and what's expected and how it's supposed to be done, you know, for consistency reasons. And, you know, we're all working for each other and we're all supporting each other. My father and uncle never had processes in place. Hey, I do the carburetor work, you do the front end work, and we'll hire these kids out of school to come in and do the oil changes, pump the gas, and we'll see what happens. And, you know, that was great in the 60s and 70s, but, you know, as business has gotten more complicated, as you know, I mean, you've got to really drill things down and and formalize the processes in order to survive.
I'm impressed with hearing you talk about the processes and systems. And I'm sitting here saying, okay, where did Steve learn all that stuff? And because you were probably a great technician and all of a sudden you're a business owner and you have to wake up to how do you do all that stuff? Was part of it your membership in ASA? Was part of it that you went through AMI?
You know, it's a lot of things, Carm. You know, when I went into business for myself, of course, I threw the doors open when I was 23 years old, and I just couldn't wait for all the customers to come in and inundate my shop with, work to be done and, gas to be sold. And I think I sat around for 2 solid hours before I even got a person to come in for $5 worth of gas. It was quite an eye-opening experience, and I realized I really didn't know a damn thing. I barely knew enough to fix a car. You know, I would stay late and study and learn what I needed to learn in order to get through that. But I realized even more as my accountant was providing me a balance sheet and a profit and loss statement that I didn't know what the hell I was looking at. One of the first things I did was a management seminar, one day deal with Napa. It gave me some good insights. And then I did a series with Dale Carnegie Institute. And then I was asked to get involved with ASA and served on the board of directors for 7 years, very, very briefly as its president prior to the time that my wife had passed away. And it was that relationship that I had with the other board members. And it was a solid group of guys. We had a person in charge of training for the entire year. They would, reach out to people and set up all these different training seminars to offer all of the ASA Colorado members. And we had the big expo that we had here. It was, I know you attended that last year or year before.
It was the second last time I traveled. What a great event that was, by the way.
It's a terrific event, and if you can believe it, back in the 90s and early 2000s, it was even bigger. It's still a terrific means of education and training. It just doesn't have the same draw from the vendors that it used to, and I think that's because vendors are doing business differently these days than they ever did before.
But there's also 10 times the amount of events, too.
Yes.
And I think they have to pick and choose. I think you give great value at ASA Colorado. There's no doubt about that. So you obviously went for your accredited Master Automotive Manager. And I mean, that training had to help you in such a big way.
It did. But I will tell you, the golden egg for me was Napa training in the mid-90s that was being spearheaded by Bob O'Connor.
Okay.
And, he had just begun his 20 groups back then. You know, there was a fair number of us in the classroom with him while he was still training for Napa at the time. He pitched us to start a 20 group here in the Denver area. And we got a core group of about, I believe it was 8 or 9 guys together and started group 7 in RLO. That's where really things turned the corner for me. A year before that, I did management success, which helped a bit. But really, the big help, because of how things were structured, the people that I got exposed to and met and that whole shop evaluation process came from RLO training.
Networking, that's the word.
Yes, for sure.
You just learn so much from your peers. And, I think it's the power of observation and listening. I mean, you don't want to be the smartest kid in the group, right?
No, I walk in and I still belong to the groups. I've been in and out of them over the course of the last, 25 years. This is my third go around. I spend more time listening than I do talking because there are so many smart people in the room. And, if I can come away from a weekend with one or two great ideas and see how they're going to work out for me, I'm pretty excited.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, Steve shares his strategy for the front counter. Hey, it's Carm here to tell you about the best shop management solution for your auto care center, Trax Enterprise. Now, since Napa introduced Trax in 1989, it's been the industry's leading shop management system out there. Today, Trax Enterprise offers even more of the features auto care center owners want. Things like a powerful interactive scheduling calendar, faster and streamlined workflow, multi-shop capabilities, easy pay consumer financing integration, and more. That means you can count on Trax Enterprise to help drive your success today and well into the future. The tabbed interface lets you open and view multiple estimates, ROs, invoices, and purchase orders all at the same time. You can even place windows side by side, over or under, or drag a tab from another application outside Trax to open another window. One auto care center owner said he loves being able to have 10 to 12 work orders open at once. Enterprise also offers a Microsoft Outlook type calendar so you can view daily, weekly, and monthly schedules, drag and drop appointments between days and times, and block time to indicate length of work. Punch out to Mitchell Pro Demand is another huge benefit. It provides embedded labor, part, maintenance, and fluid capacities that can be transferred to estimates and repair orders within Trax. Trax Enterprise also streamlines parts ordering. Just one click and it's done. The mobile capture app sold another auto care owner on Trax Enterprise. He said there's no reason to write VINs by hand anymore. You can decode the VIN from a mobile device and send all the information directly to Trax. There are reporting features too. For example, with just a couple of clicks, you can find out how many repair orders you've written in a month. Talk to your Napa Auto Parts store and find out more about what Trax Enterprise can do for you, plus the hundreds of other great things the auto care program has to offer. The theme of my show since I started day one, almost 6 years ago now, was to listen to learn just one thing.
Yep.
What's the one thing you'd love to share?
You know, one thing that just pops into my mind, I had a real problem here at the shop for a long period of time because I've got a real tight area. I've got three service bays. It's only 2,000 square feet, and we're pressed for space. I was having trouble with bulk oil storage tanks. I had three of them. You know, it had gotten to the point here in the last 10 years where more and more viscosities are out there, and then there's conventional and there's synthetic, and all of a sudden I'm keeping a case of 12 quarts on hand. I'm constantly having to reorder. Well, I went to one of these meetings, and this guy at his shop in his inventory storage room had this rack, and it had what are called eco boxes, and they hold 6 gallons of oil. And I looked at that and I saw the space that it took, and I went, okay. I immediately went back, and then my bulk oil tanks, there were three of them, so I had three different weights of oil. I got rid of those. I found a buyer for them, and I put in one of those racks that hold 9 different boxes so that I could actually triple the number of SKUs that I could hold and not have all of that wasted space and have more space for other inventory that I wanted to keep around.
We do the virtual shop tours on Tuesdays on the Aftermarket Weekly Show, and we see that everywhere.
Yeah.
Think of the different transmission fluids.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
I mean, come on. Why can't anyone just get together and live like we did with Dexron and 40ATF?
Yeah. Type F, yeah. Two transmission fluids when we had three types of oil, unless we had a real oil burning engine, then we put in 2050 or straight 30. You know, that's way back in the day. We don't even need to go there.
Back in the day. Oh my God. You could probably tell all kinds of great stories, I bet.
Had a lot of fun.
Good for you. I know that you do an awful lot of stuff in the community, the fundraising and stuff. Tell me about one of your favorites.
You know, one of my favorites, because I'm a big dog lover, was a fundraiser we put on for a group called Max Fund. What Max Fund was, there was this lady in the neighborhood here about a mile away from my shop. She put a coffee can out on her porch because her dog needed some surgery and she could not afford it. And she put a little sign out, asking people for donations. And, you know, the neighbors just inundated her with $1, $5, $20, whatever it was. Well, the dog got its surgery, lived a nice long life, and that's where the name of this came from, because her dog's name was Max. She started Max Fund out of her garage, and it became and still is to this day a no-kill animal shelter. And it's not only for dogs, but it's for cats. You know, I've done a fundraiser with proceeds of every job ticket at a certain time of year being set aside and donated to Max Fund. And over the course of time up to this point, we've raised over $11,000 for Max Fund. It's a great facility, and the people that work there are terrific, and they've really expanded the operations. I mean, they've got veterinarians on site, they've got behavioral scientists, because they actually cordon off these animals based on their individual personalities, whether they're friendly, whether they're hostile, feral, etc. It's really amazing.
My wife volunteers at the 10 Lives Club here in the Western New York area, and we've always adopted we're cat people. And so whenever there was time for another cat, that's where we would go. And volunteering there, we see that kind of behind the scenes stuff going on. And my hat's off to you for being an animal lover and supporting that. Back to the business, the front counter. Is it critical today to get really important sales training for our people?
I think it's absolutely critical. They really need to know how to read people, interact with them. It's so crucial. The automobile is so important to everybody that drives one. And everybody has their own reasons. And, you know, I've got customers that assign their automobiles names. I mean, it's that personal. And, you know, when it gets scratched or it gets dented or dinged, I mean, I've literally had people come in with tears in their eyes. You know, it's a very personal thing. So, you know, hiring the right type of person, you know, somebody that's empathetic, that enjoys interacting with people, is of paramount importance. I mean, it's just not something that you can train. You can train sales techniques and, you know, different approaches all day long. But for somebody that truly cares about other people and is empathetic towards their situation, not sympathetic, but empathetic, is really, really important. And, you know, that person on the front counter is so much more crucial to business, I'd say, in the last 10 years than they were in the previous 30 combined.
You are hiring a person for that position, not based on their skills and knowledge of automotive, but on their area of attitude and empathy, right?
Correct.
You have any females on your counter?
I've always had a female on the counter ever since the 80s. I've always felt it important. You know, it was a trend beginning back in the late 80s, as far as, you know, females taking more charge of their automobile and the repairs that go with them. And I thought it was most important to have somebody that they didn't feel threatened by, because back in the 80s and even in the 90s and somewhat today, you know, it's still on a certain level a good old boys club. There's plenty of women out there that still to this day complain about the quote-unquote being treated like a woman, whatever that's supposed to mean, because I think that they're more sophisticated, more educated about the processes. I think the men these days are the true idiots. You know, they want to get in and go, whereas the women want to know why. Why do I need this? Why is it important? What benefit is there going to be for me? And, you know, they need somebody that understands how they think and that can answer all of the questions.
It's interesting that you talked about the woman piece. I interviewed John Manilis and his wife, Karen. They were electrical engineers, and they started an automotive shop because they wanted to have a better experience for women. And now, I think maybe as of today, he may have maybe 6 or 7 locations, and he's growing and adding locations because he wants to make a difference in the woman experience for automotive repair.
I think it's critical. You know, they're making the vast majority of the automotive car buying decisions, and you know, anymore it seems that they're taking on the majority of the car repair decisions when it comes to people that interact as a couple. And then, of course, you've got those that are, you know, still on their own, not married or not in a relationship. You know, for me personally, I would much prefer dealing with a woman because they're better educated about their automobile, because they don't want to be taken advantage of. So they research, you know, they look things up. They say, okay, I'll get back to you. And then they take what you've told them. They run with it before they make a final decision. They're very smart about it. And I think it's so much easier to deal with somebody that cares about what, you know, what's happening to their automobile. Far less confrontation.
Is Steve Mancinelli going to slow down at all?
Carm, quite frankly, I really have to. You know, 4 years ago, I had to have a pacemaker put in. You know, this business has worked me over pretty good in 49 years. You know, I guess I should back that up. The business hasn't worked me over. It's been me. And, you know, I've taken on a lot of it on my own, and it's all my own doing. Nobody's done it to me. I've done it to myself. And so I really need to take a good hard look at where I'm at personally and take a step back and, you know, let the people that work for me, you know, perform their magic. I mean, they're great people, and there's no reason they can't do it. And they don't need me around.
Well, you know what? Are you going to start working like 2 days from home every week?
I don't know. I really don't know. I've got to sit down and I've got to come up with a roadmap for sure.
But no succession plan in the works at all, huh?
No, that is of priority and something I'll be working on this year.
Thank you for your wisdom. I think we learned some really good things about family, of course, what's going on in Denver, and a little bit about your great business, man.
I appreciate the time, Carl.
Steve Mancinelli, Mancinelli's Auto Repair, Denver, Colorado. Hey, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.